Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see every couple try.
I know it dates me to like this song.
The Christmas tree, let the Christmas tree.
But I grew up with it, all right. I like it.
Later we'll have.
Actually, I didn't grow up with it in my house. My parents didn't listen to this. They were like Vic Damone, right? Sammy Davis sings his 10 favorite Christmas songs. I remember, like, Chris Woodridge joins me. Woody, do you remember, like, Firestone would put out, like, its Christmas album every year?
Yes, you'd get, I mean, it wasn't just that. There were a variety of, like, Christmas album or Christmas Carol collection albums. from some pretty unusual sources, you know. Snap-on Tools Christmas collection.
Exactly. I remember going to Firestone and buying the album with my dad, I think. I remember because I wanted the fire truck. The fire truck that squirted the water when I was a kid. Like, could I get that? And he looked at me like, what are you, crazy? What, do you think we're rich? Oh, sorry about that. The Chris Woodridge, the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette, joins me, along with, he's the publisher of Leatherneck Magazine. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you, Woody. How are you today?
Mac, doing great. Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays, and heading into the tail end of the year. So best wishes in 2019 as well.
All right, I have two sons, as you know, that are both in the Marine Corps, I hear from them stories about the general lawlessness that takes place in the Marine Corps these days, all right? And I don't want to over-exaggerate it, but I'm going to ask you a question that I'm going to give you the answer, okay? So try not to screw it up. And then I'm going to give you a solution. So the question is, have we defanged – okay, let me give you some background. So the background is this. My son and I talking about something that happened, blah, blah, blah. And me saying, yeah, that didn't happen in my Marine Corps. And he said, it did. You just didn't know about it. I said, no, it didn't. I said, let me tell you the difference. If my platoon sergeant, who is a high school dropout, and about 5'10", and weighed about 250 pounds, if he looked at the Marines in my platoon and said, don't touch them. Don't touch my recruits. You understand? You know what the answer to that would have been? Yes, Staff Sergeant. You know what would have happened if they defied him and did it anyway? He would have had their ass. Okay? He would have had their ass. He would have wore their asses out. And that's why it didn't happen. There was no 2 a.m. getting him up if he didn't know about it and he didn't approve of it. And generally, he didn't. Now, you could screw with them, pick up my cigarettes boot, you know, go get me a beer out of the beer cooler in the squad bay, like that stuff. But to haze and abuse his guys, unless he said do it, it didn't get done. And it got me to thinking. Okay, so here's the question to you. Now, would you say generally that's the truth?
I would absolutely agree with that. I'm speaking from particularly my earliest service in the Marine Corps as a platoon commander,
right.
Company commander. So at company grade, yes, there was now there were some exceptional staff NCOs, this is the double edge to it. So there's an expectation. You don't do anything to the new Marines, the boots, the recruits, whatever you want to call them, unless I tell you to. But there was an expectation that he was going to tell you to. There was going to be some sorting out, some hazing going on at a very low level. The problem there is there's almost no way to keep that under control. Eventually that is going to spin out of control. And no matter who the deck plate leader is involved. And, that's where, throughout my 30 years of service, we've had problems. Is it invariably spins out of control. Either someone gets hurt or killed, or some just ridiculous, egregious, grabastic behavior goes on that becomes public, and it is a huge black eye for the trust and confidence that the Marine Corps needs to maintain.
Okay, so
to your son's point, I tend to agree.
I have to let me finish though. I disagree with you. I mean, to me, the first time I saw somebody get blood striped, I saw it took place after formation in front of God and everybody with the senior staff NCOs standing around watching it, to include the company commander and the officers. And if you acted stupid, like cocking your knee and trying to kill somebody, guess what happened? You got your shit yoked up by senior staff NCOs. Mm-hmm. Now, I absolutely. Are there idiots among us that do stupid stuff? Yes. But I would say, as a general rule, the platoon sergeants ruled with an iron fist. They were pissed. I remember coming to the Marine Corps. They were pissed when you had the Almar came out that you had to supervise or at least check on periodically whoever you signed EMI to. Okay, so if you told them to dig a by-the-numbers fighting hole out back, they were pissed because the commandant said you have to go check on them periodically because somebody fainted or some shit like that. Okay, and so they were pissed. Like, what is this shit? Like, what's going on in the Marine Corps? We're getting so soft. But they ruled it. And so were there stupid things that happened? I would say yes, because we always had stupid people. I would say were a lot of things, just our initiations and stuff, they were supervised by older, more experienced guys, and a lot of it happened out in the open. And so I would say that they ran the show, and unless they supervised it, you didn't just haul off and things, conversations that not too many of us had as second lieutenants. Hey, Staff Sergeant, what happened last night? I don't know, sir. I've talked with them, but, I just can't control them.
Right.
That conversation didn't get had too many times.
No, I don't disagree with you there. Where I think we either disagree or we're in violent agreement is there were various things happened that led to reactions at the institutional level that resulted in policies like you're describing about, supervising
right.
EMI. And what that did was drive some of these activities out of the public eye,
right.
Drive them underground.
Right.
And when that started to happen, that's a loss of control
right.
by the leadership. It's, your potential for things to spin out of hand, increases when you push things underground, out of sight, and again, it's not making it go away.
Right.
It just suborns this attitude of everything's fine if you don't get caught.
Right. So my position is that he was the break on the craziness. That whatever form of, whether it be initiation or whatever you want to call that stuff, used to take place under the supervision of a staff NCO. My experience was, I didn't have any craziness going on. I didn't have anybody showing up for my formation with their heads shaved because they didn't earn the right to wear hair or some shit like that. And because my staff sergeant was involved in it. And they would never, ever, my Marines would never defy him. Because he would have their ass. And my point is, he had the tools to have their ass. Okay? He could wear them out. He could PT them. He could do what he wants. So my question to you is, have we, in all of this, completely defanged our sergeants and our staff sergeants to the point where they have the same level of disciplinary ability as a second grade teacher who can assign an essay for the evening?
I'd say we're probably pretty close to that. I agree with you that in an effort to control these sorts of activities, the organization has depowered not a real word, disempowered, whatever you want to call it.
You just made up two words.
I know. Well, if we can empower people, then presumably we can disempower them.
But, well, so.
My point being that in the effort to control, we have either actually or by implication, by perception, depowered that deck plate level of leadership to the point where, again, either they know it's not worth their career to try to do something with these Marines. What it goes around is, you know, you mentioned that he had the cools to and the credibility to really control those Marines. Some of that is based on physical intimidation. And when you punish people for physical intimidation, they're not gonna use that tool.
Right.
So I think, yes, we have, disempowered that level of leadership, as a second order effect to trying to control the overall, what I'll call is the overall, initiation experience.
Okay.
So what there was in the 90s was, there's going to be joining the Marine Corps is initiation.
Right.
But it's initiation controlled and centralized for the entire institution. Right? And it's called the Crucible, and it happens at the recruit depots and OCS, and it is, it is within these rumble strips as established by the organization as a whole. Anything outside those rumble strips, that's over the line, and that has to be dealt with. And in the case of the junior leaders involved, it gets dealt with pretty significantly. Careers end over those sorts of sins of omission and commission when it comes to that sort of activity going on.
Okay, and so now we have a situation where the staff NCOs, and I would even say the sergeants, don't have control, and the lance corporals aren't afraid to do this shit, and so it happens and happens and happens and happens.
And it happens. So you say they're not afraid. They are, because they know that it's wrong, and they know that they have been told not to do it. And it still goes on, but driven further underground.
Okay, but my point is that they're not afraid. They're not afraid. They've heard the speeches. They've heard the company commander say it. They've heard their sergeants and staff sergeants say it. Their section leaders say it, and they're like, it's all right. We have our own rules, boys, and this is how we're going to do it. And so,
as long as we don't get caught, we're going to do whatever we want to do.
And so, to me, that's what's changed. My Marines would have never done that. If my staff sergeant would have said, "Do not touch them." Got it? You do not touch them. And I would say this: we've defanged our staff sergeants and our sergeants, to the point where we can make you write an essay. If you assign EMI, I'm going to be here supervising Lance Corporal Woodbridge's ass till 2000 tonight. I'm not doing that. I don't give that much of a shit about Woodbridge. So yeah, EMI, good in theory, but I've got to be here every second. So here's my thought, and you can give me an opinion. Speaking of second grade teachers that we've rendered, but at least a second grade teacher can assign somebody to detention in those schools that still have such a barbaric institution, such as detention, but you can stay after school. Why wouldn't the Marine Corps implement a detention system where a staff sergeant, a sergeant can assign you to detention, right? The vice principal convenes it, except now it's the XO, the first sergeant, or the gunny convenes it. Any staff NCO or platoon sergeant, any staff NCO or platoon commander can execute it. So that means you would have responsibility to execute detention every 2 weeks. So once every 2 weeks, so that would be bearable. And there's no electronic devices allowed. You can write essays. You can participate in the company gunny's beautification program. Or you can do MCIs. That's what's allowed in detention. And you're there from 1700 till 2000. And we're going to waste your time. It used to be called fuck-fuck. So we're going to institutionalize fuck-fuck. We're going to supervise it. But we're going to give a tool to the sergeants and the staff sergeants so that they can waste your time. And you can get the message that we need you to get out of bed. And we need you to be in formation on time. In the right uniform, and I know they don't have any coercive authority, but we're going to give them a little. Now, I know I haven't given you a whole lot of time to think about this. So, what do you think?
On its surface, I think that's a fine idea, and I would also say that I think it probably at a unit level goes on. Not necessarily at an institutional level, as an institutional disciplinary tool. But I think that probably goes on under the general rubric of things like extramilitary instruction. Extramilitary instruction does not have to mean being in a fighting hole. It can be that loss of time, or more importantly, loss of liberty. All right, and so remember that liberty is a privilege granted to Marines of all ranks. What we're talking about there is restricting liberty non-judicially.
Right.
So, in other words, this is not. In fact, it's not even. It's purely administratively.
Right.
It's not going to a non-judicial punishment, and it's not going any form of court-martial.
Right.
So there's no punitive action going on. It's a disciplinary tool. And I think, again, that it probably is going on in various units at the unit level to one level of supervision or another. But, you know, you got to hit the nail on the head. In order to be properly supervised and to meet the intent, it requires a commitment of time and actual presence from the leadership. And so the more troubling question is, what good reason is there for leadership not to want to make that commitment of their own time?
There is no.
Well, I don't believe there is either.
Right.
But... You know, again, do you really give that much of a crap about Woodbridge or anybody else?
Yes. I love Woodbridge.
That's what I think the more troubling question is.
Hey. Whoa. I didn't think we were going to go
is
there.
Is it worth my personal time to do these disciplinary measures on these, you know, these young Marines?
Yes, come on, we love them, man, right?
Well, I agree. That's a rhetorical question on my part.
Ew.
However,
holy
I think
shit.
That's where we have a deeper issue.
Really? See, I would tell you, from having a captain and lieutenant in my house, I would say there's incredible frustration among intermediate level leadership that we can't do anything to them. Or, I mean, they're not afraid to walk in and say, I want to charge him with assault. He grabbed me by the blouse and pulled me out of my rack because I didn't show up for formation. Not afraid to do that. And so what do we do to them? They're late for formation. They send a text message. Hey, I'm going to be late. Is that okay? Well, in a lot of places it is. Why? Well, what am I going to do? He's told me he's going to be late, and do I charge him with BNUA now? In the old days, the answer was maybe not the first time, but sure as shit the second time after he got his warning. And so, to me, the Marine Corps is a byproduct of a larger culture. We dealt with the Marines United thing. That happens on every college campus, every high school campus, every middle school campus in the country. Right? You have principals dealing with that. And so they look, honestly, at the military like, well, what is the military going to do? Because they have a lot more power than we do. And so they look at our response to it, or I say our, but the Marine Corps' response to it and say, okay, so how are they dealing with this? And so when you look at it, in my opinion again, there's incredible frustration with I don't have a tool. And that's from lieutenant captain level, where I can 6105 you or I can NJP you. But if I EMI you, I got to stay here with Woodbridge every night while he does his EMI. Right? I got a life to live too. And, oh, by the way, if I do that for my Marines, I've got 40-something of them. How many nights am I going to be here? So to me, a user-friendly tool that institutionalizes fuck-fuck the way we used to do it, that doesn't send him to NJP, blah, 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 is useful. But you're disturbing me now.
Yes.
You asked a much more deeper question than I postulated. I'm dealing with a cosmetic. Everything else is equal. And then you take the elevator going down, and you take it to a much more fundamental question.
Yeah, I think there's, I agree with everything you said, but I think that level of commitment, and again, we're talking in, we're kind of using some interesting inductive logic here as we look at very specific anecdotes or examples and then build some generalities. But I don't want to overgeneralize about the force as a whole. But I think as a reflection of, we like to say a reflection of the society.
Right.
There has been a trend towards what I call the 9-to-5 duty day culture, even in non-deployed operational forces units. And across the MAGTAF, so not purely infantry, but even, aviation units where maintenance efforts are going on 24/7, there's still on-shift, off-shift, as far as work being done on airframes. Same thing in the CSS elements, whether those are providing sustainment or doing maintenance and repair, there's a kind of a pervasive duty day attitude. And then, what goes on duty, well, that's this Marine Corps stuff. Once you're off duty, well, you kind of do whatever you want. And the expectation is that you're neither being supervised nor being required to supervise others in that off-duty period, and to me that is a far more insidious problem, and it's not unique to the Marine Corps.
Right.
That crosses all the services, and is it something new? Maybe I'm not quite sure how new it is. New from a perspective of 30 years, a generational sort of thing.
All right, so I'm going to ask you some final questions. Do you agree or disagree with the statement that we've defanged our platoon level, where the rubber meets the road kind of leadership, to the point where we've compromised their ability to influence? Have we defanged them to that extent? And now we're saying, oh, no, you're a positive role model. You should get in and you should get to know them. And you should, well, yeah, no shit. The good ones have always done that. But when they do step across that line, do they have any tools other than write me an essay? And the answer that I get back is no. That's kind of what you can do with them. And then it goes to EMI, and then it goes to NJP. So would you agree or disagree that we've defanged them to an extent that's detrimental to the organization?
I would agree. I think we have defanged, disempowered, taken not just taken some tools away, but made the environment less practical for those types of leadership tools.
I like that.
When a junior Marine believes that being rousted out of Iraq is assault, there's again that's an environmental problem. Using that as an example, but the fact of the matter is, yes, I agree that we have made it far more challenging for that level of leadership to discipline their charges to execute at that level.
And I don't know how the organization functions smoothly if the inmates don't think that that guy's in charge and I have to take what he says seriously.
There's a lot of truth in that. Now the flip side is also true, and you talked about the good ones,
right?
And the fact is, pain is a great teacher, fear is a great motivator, but particularly for close ground combat formations, sooner or later that Marine is going to be in a position where he is more afraid of something other than the platoon sergeant or the squad leader than he's afraid of the squad leader or the platoon sergeant.
Yeah.
So if fear is your only disciplinary and leadership tool, that will run out pretty quickly.
I agree with all that. Right. I think that my own opinion, again, is that there's a certain amount of discretion that our staff NCOs and our squad leaders ought to have. And we should give them at least the ability to play some small amount of fuck-fuck and waste somebody's time short of NJP. And, as Musselman said, making them write an essay, shit, there's probably a library of them on online someplace. And I said, you know what? I didn't even think of that. He said, you weren't enlisted. He said, you don't think like that. He said, yeah, you just go download it and you bomb it out. And he said, and you're done with it. I'm like, good, good God.
So, I don't disagree with that. And the other factor there is the quality of the NCOs and staff NCOs that we're talking about. If we achieve the goal of developing, for example, infantry squad leaders to the level of capability that we seek to, with things like the squad leader development program and maturing the force for leadership at that level, then you absolutely have to have the trust and confidence in those Marines using the leadership tools that you described. However, when the quality standard is not that high, do you really want to empower folks with those sorts of tools? And I think the answer is maybe yes, maybe no, but the rational man looks at the next level of leadership, the next level of command for increased supervision of those junior leaders. And so it's almost a trickle-up thing.
Well, here's what I think is the beautiful part of company detention. So Woodbridge comes in, and he's in detention again. Okay? So I say, Woodbridge, what's your problem? This is the fifth time you've been here this month. Oh, sir, And so now I begin to see that it's not always Woodbridge. Okay? So now I sit down with my first sergeant, and I say, because, the company commander, if I got guys at detention, just like the principal from the high school, I'm going to walk through and see who's in there. Hey, boys, what's going on? Oh, Woodbridge, do you want to start helping us run detention? Because you're here just about every day. Or maybe we should, you know, ratchet up the, you know, the pressure on your ass, Woodbridge. So if too many customers are coming in from second squad of third platoon, that gives me an indication of where I might want to focus a little bit more leadership, yes? So that's what I think is the beauty of it. It will give you some barometer into the soul of your organization, where you need more additional leadership and to shore up leaders that are already there because you have a certain amount of lawlessness going on, and then also where you have Marines. So I don't know. I just in search of some kind of.
Now, before we in your model that you're describing here. Assignment to company detention still requires the company commander's approval, correct?
No. That's what I'm trying to get away from is the squad leader. It requires the platoon sergeant. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get away the platoon sergeant, platoon commander approval. I'm trying to give a tool to the NCO. And I don't want him to be undermined by it. So I would almost say sergeant can assign you to that. And so, but it's all in-house. And so if the platoon commander has an issue, to me, Woodbridge goes to detention, and the platoon commander takes up with the squad leader later. And so, I'm trying to give them a tool other than write me an essay. And so if I was a platoon commander, I don't like you sending it. I'm certainly going to review it. McNamara, why is Woodbridge there again? Don't you see that this is more about you than it is about Woodbridge? Oh, no, sir. Oh, okay, well, we need to talk then. Staff Sergeant, Gunny, First Sergeant, come on in there. We got to talk to McNamara. It's not perfect. But I just listened to the whole essay thing. It's like that's something a second grade teacher would do. And then the stories I see, you know, they understand. The 2 a.m., if you read the articles of hazing, the Marine Corps Times just published one last week that the 1st Marine Division did about the 1st Marine Division. I mean, it's Lance Corporals and Corporals getting people out of the rack at 2 in the morning with obviously with no fear of their platoon sergeant. Their squad leaders, what they're going to do. Because you know they've been specifically told not to do it. And that whole thing, you haven't earned the right to have hair yet. Okay. And so trying to give a tool to give them teeth again because they've been defanged is what I was thinking about. So give that some thought when you come on next month. After it bounces around in your brain housing group for a while, let me know if you have a better tool for me. But trying to put a little bit more oomph into what they used to do, which was run those units with a bit of an iron fist. And not always, and again, there was bad things that happened, but I would say that the bad that happened then, and this is just my recollection as from being a second lieutenant, was far less than the bad that you see happening now. I see it as a wider issue in the Marine Corps than I did back then. Up was up back then. Up ain't up anymore. So anyway, all right. Let's talk about you and your personal issues. No, let's talk about you and let's talk about you and this month's Marine Corps Gazette. Now that we talked about company level detention.
There's something you can. Require people to do while they're in company detention is read their professional journal.
Yeah, you know what? There you go. It could be a reading cover program.
Cover to cover, and then you write your essay on that. I imagine. I'm almost wondering now how many of the articles for submission that I'm seeing at times are the product of that sort of that sort of EMI. I was made to write this. Let me see if I can get it published.
Yeah, we don't care. We don't care if you were made to. Yeah. We just want you to write, so that's fine with us.
Well, I could, none of the certainly nothing that's in the December issue falls into that category.
Right. No, no EMI in the December. In the December.
Yeah, not that I can tell. Not that I can tell. If it was, it was at a very high level. But no, December this year is a little might seem a little I don't know, incongruous to some people. We did a focus section on modern fire support, modern fires as a subject area, and you know, why in the world would you put that in the December edition, you know, in the holiday season? And as it says on the cover, because well, today is St. Barbara's Day, so. And St. Barbara being the patron saint of artillerymen, I figure we kind of a unique recognition to that that community, and use this this opportunity to actually cover a very wide variety of subjects related to fires, because I do get a lot of material, a lot of content in that area.
So the holiday edition is devoted to fires?
Yes. Yeah, you know, like I say, a little maybe a little non-standard, but you know, it's I don't think inappropriate to recognize our
of course
our patroness of artillery in that way.
Of course not. Of course you wouldn't.
Yeah. And, you know, having gone through 12 years of Catholic school, that probably, you know, I'm working off something.
You know what? I've got you beat, though. I went to 15 years.
Really?
Yeah. Don't, no comments. That explains a lot of shit, Mac. You got issues. All right, so let's talk about the Artie guys. Come on, they go crazy for this stuff. I heard somebody ask this question. We give, and we were just talking about it, we give our NCOs less and less discretion. I don't know, ever in the history of the Marine Corps have our non-commissioned officers ever had less discretion, but we're going to authorize them to shoot stuff digitally and things like that at very, very far distances. So it's kind of an interesting...
There you go. There you go, Mac. There is the...
conundrum.
And that has been the cognitive dissonance, the audio not matching the video, since the inception, in my opinion, since the inception of maneuver warfare as a warfighting doctrine, and the ideas of trust tactics and decentralized execution. We are not going to, on the one hand, in garrison, allow you the tools of small unit discipline and leadership without intense levels of supervision. But at the same time, in an operational environment or even in a training environment, because we want to train like we fight, we're going to decentralize and empower you with incredible destructive power. And and life and death decisions over those Marines that you are responsible for applying that deadly force, that destructive power. So there's some audio not matching the video for me. And again, this has been, in my opinion, an issue for a long time. You know, it's okay in the field, but it's not okay in garrison. That's great while we're on deployment, or that's great while we're operational and fighting. But you know, you can't do that back at the Camp Pendleton or Lejeune or 29 Palms. That's a no go.
Hey, and you know, let me just tell you, anybody who paid attention in Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, because of the way we communicate in Merc Chat and things like that, and I mean, you had squad patrols that were inserted by helicopters. Those CONOPs having to go to division and to the MAW because they involved an air aviation insertion, right? And so the level of scrutiny and the level of I can reach down, and so therefore I'll clear those missions because I can see them. Why wouldn't I coordinate and clear them at my unit? Well, I know, but, sir, historically we do it at the lowest level. Yeah, you know, yeah, but this is really delicate, blah, 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 and you get that shit all the time, Woody. And so it seems like we're saying one thing that we want to go that way, but as you said, The audio ain't matching the video.
Right. And again, it's, you know, it's insidious. And, you know, we now, you know, routinely mandate, for, you know, smaller distributed units, alright, there has to be a field grade officer, a phone call away, or, there needs to be a general officer, as the senior man in that formation that's doing, humanitarian assistance or disaster relief.
Right.
Those 20 Marines, that are, outposted, well, there has to be a major in charge of them. So that sort of, leadership grade inflation further, erodes this idea of trust tactics and true decentralization. And yet at the same time, you know, who is running, that gun line? Using again the focus for December of artillery, when we start talking about, you know, towed artillery, you know, who is running the gun line? NCOs and sometimes staff NCOs. Who is responsible for, where that, immensely destructive projectile is going to go? Yes, there's officers, a fire direction center, but, even with, manual and digital, you know, backups, it comes down to what is going on down at the gun line, where leadership is at deck plate level.
Okay, so given that it is the month of St. Barbara, what do the Army guys have to say? Because let me tell you, that shit is all great until the first round goes where it's not supposed to go, and then we can't get.
That's right.
Because it's one
a very
thing,
zero, yeah. A very for very good reasons, given the capability of these weapons.
Yeah,
it's a very I'll use the word zero defect. Environment when it comes to live fire. Again,
for good reason, though, right? People get dead.
Reasons.
Yeah, people get dead.
And
that's not good. I mean, I can remember. Do you remember the story about? It's a horrible story. I don't remember the names involved in it, but a battery shot out a fan at Camp Lejeune and killed a dependent wife, yes. Do you remember?
That's correct.
Yep. It's a horrible story. But I mean, so it's like, and the same thing with maneuver warfare. Yeah, we're all going to be decentralized. All these decision makers, blah 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 blah. And then you get down to it, and it's like, okay, as soon as we start shooting live rounds, nobody's going anywhere, right? I'm not moving. Somebody's going to blow my ass away, right? I mean. So that uncoordinated flanking attack that we always see at the base of school, when the first time you hear like four blanks go off, pop, 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 and then got people running, flanking attacks going on simultaneously from both flanks. Also takes
oh, no, not the not the dreaded O tactics.
Exactly. All you need to say is, okay, boys, look, you know, we got the enlisted instructors with us. Okay, I don't know who's got it, but somebody's got a live round. So, keep your asses down. Nobody will probably get hit with it, but good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Big sky, little bullet.
Yeah,
good
pop,
luck.
Pop, 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 and nobody moves. What's going on? Why do you want my fire team to go? Hey, right? That's all it takes, because people actually get killed. So, all this shit we talk is really nice, but I don't know if it works like that in the real world, in a world that becomes more centralized.
Yeah, I would. I'm not gonna go through all the content in that section, but you know, for folks who want to, you know, get some reading on it, some detailed reading done, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, strict surface fires, be it towed artillery or rocket artillery, or we're talking about fires and fire support more generally to include close air support. Naval surface fire support. There's sort of two major trend lines, and the first is probably pretty intuitive, and that is the growth of digital capabilities in terms of conduct of fire, fire support coordination, and fire support as a warfighting function. So in to a high degree, it's an optimistic trend line about the making these weapons and their effects much more effective, much more efficient, and into the real combat multiplier that they're meant to be. There is, in some cases, another trend line that's needing to be talked about, and that is that for really the better part of 15 years, the Marines that are charged with using these weapons, that's their primary function, in many cases have been not doing that operationally. They have been fulfilling in lieu of missions as everything from provisional infantry to provisional MPs to various types of training team from an individual Marine level for the more senior Marines down to the drivers and gunners for some of these units. And that was ubiquitous in Iraq and Afghanistan to the point where some very senior leaders were pointing to the artillery community and saying that everyone in that community needs to have an alternate MOS of civil affairs or a similar irregular warfare focused function. And so what we have now is essentially about a half a generation's worth of fire support Marines. And again, very, very narrowly focused on the artillery community, who have not exclusively been focused on those weapons and that function. So the pucker factor that you're describing about live fire and doing this stuff in a distributed environment, we are now, thankfully, work of all the operating forces and Training Education Command, we're getting further into practicing and training those skills again. But there is still a concern because of this generation or near half generational repurposing that went on. So just a little commentary there on what your folks or what readers will find out there in that section of December.
Okay, give me a couple articles to make sure that we read this month.
Let's see. So in addition to those, let me highlight one really, really important article and a couple others here that are really worthwhile. So on the history side, you've got a really fine article by Colonel Walt Ford, a retired former member of this institution, and he's writing about the Marines in World War One. It's a look at what Marines did beyond Belleau Wood. So looking at the entire Marine campaign in France, much better context again. Looking at that, just over 100 years and 1 month now. The second article I think everyone needs to read is titled "Close Combat Victory in 2030," and the primary author on it is Captain Matt Williams. What this article is it's essentially future history. So it's obviously set in 2030, and the article is intended to be the transcript of congressional testimony going on after a successful distributed campaign somewhere in the Pacific, shall we say.
Okay.
And Marines, small unit, distributed forces, successful in that campaign. The Senate Armed Services Committee has called a hearing for a group of leaders involved to talk about what contributed to this success. and it highlights the necessity for something that you and I have talked about in the past, rigorous, realistic, challenging, standards-based training for small unit infantry leaders. And so the Marines that we intend to lead, these highly lethal distributed ground combat formations, what goes into making that Marine? What goes into training, qualifying that Marine for that job? Looking at this from the lens of what we seek to be in the future operating environment, and again using a sort of a science fiction future history approach to tell that story.
Right. Wow.
Relevant to the discussion that we've just been having.
Is it just
everything from the having the right tools for small unit leaders in terms of discipline to trust tactics and what we what we say and what we do with regard to trusting small unit leaders in one environment but not in another, and then this talking to the nature of the training required for those Marines.
I used a term when I wrote an article about, I think, decision making. Or it might have been Why Doesn't First Fire Team Rush that was published in the Gazette. But it was one of the articles I had published in the Gazette years ago.
Yep.
And it was the term is that I invented, and I've seen it used since then, probably unbeknownst to me, and that I had used it first, was this concept that I called coordinated initiative. And that is, look, I think we misunderstand the use of initiative in terms of, look, initiative isn't you going off doing something that nobody knows about, right? The first thing is your job is, if you see an opportunity on the battlefield, your job is to take that will hasten the demise of our enemy, or our objective. It'll make it easier, less costly. It's your responsibility to do that, right? But as soon as you make that decision, you've got to coordinate it, because that metal really kills people. I mean, people really get dead out there. And so those are your two responsibilities, to be a decision maker and then coordinate. If you're going to deviate from the plan, to coordinate that. And I don't know that we teach that very well. I think, this whole idea of initiative, blah, 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 blah. Well, look, and you've got a decision to make. If you can't coordinate it and nobody knows you're going out there and there's other people there that are shooting targets out there, then guess what? Maybe you should sit on it for a little bit until you can coordinate it, lest you get you and your Marines dead. And so,
right,
to me, that's a more advanced discussion of initiative than just, hey, go north and do good things. Okay. It doesn't work like that. You don't operate in the context of a battalion. You operate in the context of a regimental combat team, as part of the MEF, as part of a joint task force. So, it's interesting stuff.
Well, it also, the strong message in this article is that, perhaps unlike, prior generations, number one, not any Marine can be an infantry Marine, and more importantly, the idea of the old acronym ground replacement, usually not trained, that's not feasible for the future operating environment, or really even the current environment for close combat, highly lethal infantry and ground combat formations.
Yeah.
So it's not the world of massed infantry anymore.
Right.
And because of that, the capabilities required in those small teams, from the leaders to the individual Marines, the bar is much higher.
All right. Give me one article that's online and not in the print edition that we should take a look at.
On the website, I would recommend Naval Surface Fire Support in a Contested Environment.
Okay.
Looking at kind of the broader area of amphibious forced entry operations. What is and isn't realistic in the current and future operating environment? You know, you and I are both of an age where we've seen the quantity and types of naval guns, naval surface fires just dwindle over the last 30 years. I was actually in the last naval gunfire school class in the Philippines to fire the New Jersey live in training. So we went from a world where we had battleships to a world now where, as an example, in the initial phases, the opening gambit of OIF, no U.S. Naval surface fire support was able to press in close enough to the Basra Bubian Island area to actually provide any sort of fire support to the Yulborn U.S. and U.K. forces going into that area. Some British and Australian surface combatants did, but again, this is a fundamental change in littoral or amphibious operations, and has to be accounted for as we look at role, mission of the Marine Corps, and forced entry in the future.
Yeah, and that proposition only seems to get more and more problematic and difficult as surface-to-ship missile technology gets refined. And that whole problem gets more and more complicated. So interesting. All right, Woody. First of all, thanks for taking part in the leadership forum today. To me, it's a problem that the Marine Corps has. The Marine Corps attempt adding 2 weeks on to recruit training, in order to try to accommodate a young American that has been raised in a world that's different than the world that Woody and I certainly grew up in. Right. And so have we skewed too far in the wrong direction? And now we got to bring this thing back to center to make sure that up is always up, down is always down. And the pointy edge of the spear is always pointed in the right direction. And it's always pointy. You know, so it's something I think about because of my sons and the things they talk about. And so I appreciate you weighing in on it and making me more concerned than I was when the program started. So thank you very much.
I'm not here to make anybody feel better.
spoken like a true Marine.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thanks, Woody.
All right, thanks, Mac.
This is a good one. That is awesome. I'm not here to make anybody feel better. Merry Christmas. That is quintessentially Marine-like. So well done, Chris Woodbridge. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. The Gunner joins us, so don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.